Hey friends, welcome to The Problem with Perfect. What is the problem with perfect? It's the myth that if we just do more, be more, and have more, our lives will be perfect. I'm Robin May, a journalist, wife, mother, and most days a faith-filled Christian.
And I'm Denise Bickle, a clinical therapist, educator, mom, Mimi, and spirit-filled follower. As recovering perfectionists, we promise to be transparent and real and to share the wisdom of trusted advisors and guests.
So pull up a chair and have a seat. There's always a place for you at our table. Welcome back to another episode. Denise, how are you?
I'm better. I'm better today.
Oh, I know what you're talking about, but share with our guests why this week was so hard on you.
Well, on Monday, I practically needed a transfusion for hydration because I had cried my eyes out watching Jason Kelce retire. And then I just further subjected myself to more misery by watching it over and over again. And so I finally decided that I was traumatizing myself and I needed to stop watching it. So I think as of yesterday afternoon, I started feeling better.
Well, you sent me a text. I don't know exactly what it said, but something about I'm not okay.
Yes.
Exactly what you were talking about.
Yeah. Well, and then yesterday was the final day because then I listened to their podcast.
Yes.
Oh, and I thought, okay, good. We're doing good. And then at the end, you know, they revisited their special relationship and oh my gosh. So I'm better today.
Yeah. Well, good. Denise, it's been really fun this week. Thinking about for me, even thinking about retirement and maybe what would that look like or sound like, but also loving the fact that he was so emotional because he loved what he did with people that he loved for so long. And how cool is that? And I love how he modeled really just being raw with our emotions for people, because I think sometimes, especially for men, that's really hard to do. So
yeah. I agree. And the part that I really appreciated was that although he became so emotional that he had to stop a few times and collect himself and get himself sort of back under control, he never once said sorry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so often when people become emotional, they'll, you know, especially in my line of work, they'll be like, oh, I'm sorry. And how could you not be emotional when something like that was happening? Or if you're talking about someone you love dying. And so I really appreciated that he didn't do that. He was who he is. And he would take a minute to kind of get himself centered again and then move on. So
yeah,
it was a lesson.
It's funny that you said that because when I was watching it, like so many times, I was saying sorry for him. Like that was like what I was thinking, is that he's going to lift his head and say sorry. And he never did. And it was delightful. So I love the way he just led by example in that mm-hmm. press conference in so many ways, being generous and kind and humble and super transparent. So also, as we transition to our conversation today, I was pretty impressed that he was able to stay super focused over what was like a 45 minute. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you call it speech. I guess we'll call it retirement speech, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And he did a great job with that because I think it's really hard to keep your mind focused, or at least I'll say for me, it's really hard to keep my mind focused. So yes, I was impressed that Jason Kelce was able to maintain his focus and have like just a really meaningful hour with people, because mm-hmm. I feel like I struggle more and more all the time to stay focused. So in that vein, whenever I started investigating our guest for today, she has an amazing YouTube channel. And one of the first lines in one of her teaching videos is, do you often find yourself struggling to maintain focus or feeling mentally drained? And I was like, I need to just pause there and take a moment, because yes, Yes, I do, and it is incredibly frustrating. So, Denise, do you know what I'm talking about?
I'm afraid I do way too well.
Exactly. So we were so excited when our guest today, Dr. Janine Stiester, agreed to be with us on the podcast. Dr. Stiester is a graduate with her PhD from the University of Iowa. But beyond that, she came to Columbia, I don't know how many years ago, but she's been here a long time. I got to know her through our church and our boys. They ran cross country together. And I have just kind of sat back from afar and watched her do really amazing things. And so I'm really so excited that she's willing to share expertise with us on the podcast today. So Dr. Seester, she is a, what I think I'm going to say, a human behaviorist. Is that a fair title? Would you accept that title?
Yes,
Yay.
absolutely.
Well, what else would you tell our listeners about yourself?
Well, first of all, thank you for having me. And I'm just so excited to do this and have these conversations with you both. And the focus that you guys have on your podcast is just so in line with the things that I think are so important for humans. And, but yeah, I'm a behaviorist and I'm just very passionate about helping people understand how they kind of tick, especially in context. So in relationship to their environment and other relationships, and whether it's work or home or with friends or family. And so I've spent the last several decades doing everything from teaching about that to doing a lot of research, applied research with humans about how to optimize. And I really like to focus on strength-based approach. We all are naturally wired towards certain ways that we manifest our personalities. And so what I really like to do is help people think about how to take their strengths to get to their goals and also not work against the things that they're not naturally oriented to, because not everything has to be hard or difficult. It can be easy and enjoyable, just mindful and purposeful. And so aside from the university, I spend a lot of time in doing a lot of executive or business coaching with leaders to help them be the best that they can be, and then also positively impact the people that they're leading. And with that, I also work a lot in the health and wellness area and some corporate wellness, but just also how to help people kind of connect their mind and body in a way that really supports their goals and just to have a quality of life.
It's fascinating. I don't know how you learn to integrate all that you did, but I'm really excited you did and glad you're going to share with us about that today.
So, as Robin mentioned, we watched a YouTube video entitled Transform Your Mind: 8 Powerful Habits for Cognitive Potential. And I was quite simply amazed at the video, as well as the fact that it's had almost 30,000 views. And that is pretty amazing, I think, for, and it, I think it also lends itself to the fact that so many people are interested in this topic and wanting to achieve the highest potential that they can. And so we are very excited to have you here.
Thank you.
And I have to say, when I watched it, first of all, it's super well done. I love the narration, the
The doodlies, yeah.
yes, so cool. And helped me stay engaged, which I'm sure you did because you knew it would help me stay engaged. So thank you for that. And also, I have to be honest, I heard some terms that I'm not 100% familiar with their definition. And so I thought we might just start there. So, like when you think about cognitive capacity or cognitive potential, because that's really the whole point of our conversation today is helping people unleash their cognitive potential, their capacity, and their function. How would you define these terms, and are they all the same or are they interrelated?
Yeah, and I think probably the best way that I would say is I like to define these terms contextually. In other words, I feel oftentimes in society we have a tendency, through a variety of reasons, media and just sort of our natural nature, to try to create these finite either goals or what potential means, or just like if you hit here, then you've hit it type of thing, where I define it, so for example, cognitive potential is, it depends on what you want to do. And so if you want to have stronger relationships, if you want to be more intentional, if you want to be able to juggle more balls and get more things done efficiently, whatever it is that's driving you, how can you support your cognitive capacity to hit those? And what does that look like? And so I don't have a set, like, cognitive capacity means, because to me, it doesn't resonate with people. There's a lot of nice vocabulary terms around there, and I'm just not much one for getting fancy about it, but more just really applied and practical. And so for me, it's really about, and also I feel like we have goals that shift through the seasons of our lives and moments in our lives. And so that capacity is going to look different at different times. And when we are full charge ahead of coordinating our lives and our families and all of those types of things, there might be other goals that are not on the forefront, but at another time might be. And so that capacity will shift. So hopefully that sort of answers that question.
Yeah, it absolutely does. And I think it makes it more inclusive, you know, because I feel like we all, what I hear you say is that we all will want to maximize our cognitive function, but it might look very different at different points in our life and at different aspects of our life, whether it be work or personal.
Yeah. And it depends on what you're doing. And I view it as sort of the, it's like muscle capacity for your body. We have so many different muscles, and the capacity really just depends on what you want to do. If you want to run a marathon, that capacity for your body and those muscles is going to look a little different than if you want to go break a powerlifting record, or if you just want to pick up your grandkid without hurting and play with them, right? And so that's how I view cognitive capacity as well. It's just which facets of our cognitive functioning, which ones we need, and we can get into all the fancy brain stuff, but the reality is it's just having to do with what we're focused on at that moment, and how can we make that as efficient and effective as possible to give ourselves space for additional things or just to not even do anything. So.
Yeah. And kind of in that same vein, I heard the word neuroplasticity in the video. And so I did a little bit of a deep dive into the definition. And I'm just wondering, and it sounds like I might have hit it, but am I correct in understanding that neuroplasticity is the brain's ability to be malleable in receiving and processing information?
Exactly. Yes, absolutely. Right. Yeah. And there's this assumption, more and more people have been talking about this. And Andrew Huberman, of course, who most people have heard of by now, that has a very thorough podcast on pretty much anything he talks about. But a lot more people are understanding that in the past, I think there was more of an assumption that, you know, the way that we function is sort of on this bell curve. And so there's this peak part of your life. And then after that, it's just downhill and you're just trying not to, you know, go downhill too fast. But what we're really understanding about that neuroplasticity is that brain's ability. And the more that we provide it with different inputs and think about that, the better that plasticity stays and we can continue to grow and learn and process information and things like that.
Yeah. Good. Well, and I was a little bit surprised to find that there was also information that there's a negative side to neuroplasticity. And I was challenged by what that would be.
So, I think part of it is there's negativity in most, it's kind of back to that notion of moderation. And when we do in extremes of pretty much anything, and it's back to, I think, what I was alluding to before is that there is sometimes this tendency that more is always better. And when we're overstressing anything and we're over pushing on anything, we can have some negatives. And the negatives might not, and I think this is a huge part of what oftentimes, you know, and again, it fits so well with the theme of your podcast of this, what's wrong with, you know, perfect. It's that if we hit this mark, or that there's this level to hit at all times. And so the negativity comes with that, is if we're constantly like, oh, we've got to constantly, you know, add more processing and do more things, and nothing is ever enough. What happens is that maybe the neuroplasticity continues to grow, but we are stressing ourselves out. We're reducing our body's physical abilities. We are maybe not as intentional or mindful, or we're missing out on connections and relationships, or even just replenishing ourselves, you know? And when I see people push really hard, because this is the information age. So if you go on to the internet, there is just no end to apparently what we can all do. However, you know, in return, we see people not sleeping, not hydrating, not doing some of the other things that actually are cornerstones to anything else that we want to do. So that's more where that really tends to come into play in a practical standpoint.
Mm-hmm. Good. I'm glad. Thank you.
And I'm relieved by that, because what you're saying is like the brain has probably the capacity to do more than we can physically keep up with. And that's good to know, because sometimes I get down a rabbit hole, whether it's on the internet or I'm analyzing some business proposition and my business with my work, and I'm like, you know, I can do it for 3 hours, and then I walk away and I'm like, I really have no idea what I just learned in the last 3 hours, because I'm kind of, I overdid it, so to speak.
We also lose a way to organize the information that we consume, and therefore we you know, my analogy is always like, it's a, well, for those that still remember what a filing cabinet is, but it used to be for some of us that we remember, it used to be a place you put papers and you organized them, you know, and you had little file folders and whatever. And our brains work similarly to that, right? We have short-term memory, long-term memory, we file things in there. And oftentimes people are like, well, I can't remember anything. And I'm like, well, actually, most of the time we can't recall where we put it. We can't retrieve it. And now some things never go from short-term to long-term memory. But my point in all of that is that with the extreme amount of information we have, it is easy just to keep digging and digging and getting more and more. But if we don't have a good system for connecting that information and then labeling it and storing it in a way that we can retrieve it, we just go, what did I learn, or what did I get out of that, or those types of things. So,
and does that connect with how you look at mind mastery? Because that's a term you use a lot in your work as well.
Yeah, it's really designed to denote this notion of that. I like to use the term of being responsive and not reactive. And so when I think of mind mastery, I'm really thinking about it as that I'm not walking around just reacting to everything and seeing what my capacity at that moment is, but that I'm really actually thoughtful about what I'm doing with my brain. Where am I spending my time? It's things that we would tell our children, like, don't sit on Instagram all day long, or don't do this, or, you know, those types of things, because what are you feeding yourself? Well, it's the same thing as, what am I doing with my brain? Where am I spending my energies? Some of us, for example, are wired to be highly detailed people. And so we get very into the weeds, so to speak, but there's some times where we really don't need to be that far in the weeds. So it's just that mind mastery of, when do I edit myself, and where do I put my resources, and do I understand where my brain is the happiest at that moment, or where I can use my capacity to really move the needle towards the goals that I want? Because, you know, people are very busy. And so we have to sort of, in my mind, master a little bit of where we spend our energies.
Yeah, which I'm assuming takes some self-awareness that maybe some of us aren't so good at.
Yeah, sometimes when we get into adulthood, as children, we tend to be a little bit more naturally explorative. And we have fewer mental confines, right? As we age, more of societals or parenting confines or parameters by which to think of things have been infused. And it's very easy as adults to kind of go, okay, I'm supposed to have income. I need to take care of my household, if I have a family that I'm raising, or relationships that I'm nurturing. And so you just get into these tasks and routines and things like that. And so part of that self-awareness, to your point, Robin, is just asking oneself, like, what do I care about as a parent? Like, what's important to me as a parent? Obviously, for everybody, I haven't met anyone who's like, I'm not really interested in being a good parent. Like, you know, of course, we all want to be a good parent. But, you know, I've had conversations with people that talk about that they absolutely love being gone every weekend to baseball games and things like that with their kids, because they say, hey, this is quality time in the car, and we're all together, and this is amazing. I have other people that say, I don't want to be road warriors all weekend with my family. That's not what family connection means to me. I think those are amazing conversations and great examples of people saying, this is what it would feel like to me to have the family or the parenting interaction or whatever it is for me. And then based on that, then I'm going to make some decisions about what we do. Whereas if we're not thoughtful that way, we can get just, oh, my kid's supposed to be on this traveling baseball team and everybody else's kid is, so we're just doing that. And maybe that's a great fit, but maybe it's not. So it's just things like that, whether it's work or home or those types of things.
Well, we probably should have had that conversation 20 years ago.
Shouldn't we have all? But I mean, it's just, it is just constantly having, asking oneself. And, you know, even my kids moved out of the house, right? They became young adults. Now I have to start asking myself some questions and not just keep moving along without saying, what do I need now? Or what is this going to look like? Or,
yeah. So it's never too late, right?
No, I don't. Gosh, I hope not.
That's the exciting part.
I'm counting on that it's not too late. No, it's not.
Good. Well, and you know, I watched the video and I thought it was wonderful. And when we get into the 8 powerful habits for cognitive potential, you know, the first few that you mentioned had to do with sleep and hydration and nutrition. And I was wondering, what is it about what we put in our body that affects our brains and our cognitive potential?
Yeah, and that's a wonderful question. You know, I'll just take sleep and then I'll kind of put through the other ones quickly. But one of the less understood types of things that people deal with sleep is we oftentimes view, for example, sleep and things like that as, we'll try to do what we can. But what we don't realize is that it's truly food for our brain. Our brain has to, you know, and if you look at even different sleep cycles that you go through in the evening, as you sleep, there are parts of it that are truly restorative. And so if we skip those types of things, it is much easier for us then to be more fatigued. Our learning gets slowed down because we are working harder to do that. Same thing with hydration. And it's not that I'm just one of those people that's like, okay, you got to drink all your water each day and those types of things. I don't love water. I'll be the first to admit it. So but I also recognize that my electrolytes might not be 100%. So I throw those in some water. I make it taste better. And I get that because if you're dehydrated and you're low on sleep, you're getting headaches, your vision is tired, your eyes get very tired, your processing speed literally goes down and things become more work. And I never, when we talk about physiology and biology and how our brain works, you know, I always avoid speaking in absolutes, because when we talk about humans, there is no absolute. There are some people that truly are optimally functioning at 6 hours of sleep. But most people need more than that, ideally, and very few people are actually being restored with 5 hours of sleep. But there are a few. So I never want to be an absolute on that, but the research is super clear on this. And I've worked with so many people on changing just some of those basic things. And it's not about being perfect. It's not about having the perfect diet. It's not about drinking the exact amount of ounces of water a day, but it is about, am I hydrating? Am I finding myself sluggish? What are some small things I can do that will make that better? Because as we talk to people, we see so many people kind of give up goals or dreams that they had or self-care because they're just so exhausted or just so drained. So I'm like, if we can tweak a few of those physical things that we do to our bodies to make that easier, why not? And my point is, they don't have to be complicated things. They're just small little tweaks that can make a huge impact.
I really appreciated how you said that, you know, there are no absolutes, because like the perfectionist in me, it was like I had my pen ready and I was ready, like, okay, this is how much sleep I need, and this is how many ounces of water I should drink, and these are the three nutrient-rich foods that are best for my brain. Like, you know, and I think that that's the way some of us, the formulaic way we think, oh, I'll win, I can do these things, and Janine's going to tell me exactly how to do those. That becomes really too prescriptive sometimes as well, if you have maybe personalities like mine.
Well, and also sometimes it's not practical. It's a great marketing strategy of like, here's the three brain boosting foods that you eat and whatever, but it's not about as much of how much we do, it's what we do consistently. So I always talk to people like, if you up your water intake or throw some electrolytes in there by 8 ounces a day, you're 8 ounces ahead of what you used to be. And we can talk about adding more later, or if you just have 30 minutes of better sleep than you did before, those are major changes. And over time, they really add up. But if you spend 2 weeks drinking, you know, half your body weight in ounces, which is, you know, the technical recommendation of water, and you get a perfect 8 hours of sleep for 2 weeks, and then after that, you're like, I can't keep this up and whatever. And then now you're back to what you were before or even less. How did that help? Right. So when I work with people that have perfectionist tendencies, I don't tell them to not be a perfectionist, because that is a tendency and a natural wiring. So what I ask them to do is, can you work on being more perfect on your consistency? So just, and what can we be consistent with? And if it's 2 more ounces than you were doing before, and you can be consistent with that, amazing. And it's actually how habits are formed. We have to build on them, and they have to be ingrained into our lifestyle for an extended period of time before they're actually a habit, which by definition is automated and automatic, so we don't have to think about it. So I always want to work on something that you can slide into your lifestyle. Same thing with food, you know, there's all this of like, oh, have a well-balanced breakfast. Well, if you're someone that's running out the door with your kids, heading to work, trying to remember all your stuff and their stuff, the likelihood that you're going to stop, make a whole breakfast, clean it up, all that stuff just for yourself, it's probably pretty low if you've been running out the house for 10 years, you know, with your coffee and that's it, right? So if I can slide a protein bar that you can eat while you're driving on the way, and it's already in your car or in your purse, then let's do that. And I've got more protein in, and I've got a little bit more nutrient. If you hate breakfast, then we won't focus there. So.
And, you know, I look at these things, the, you know, hydration, sleep, nutrition, those are things that you can control. And I think for people to be successful in their goals, there has to be things, there's going to be plenty of things that get in the way. Exactly. But if you can control a few of those, you feel much more empowered to keep working towards your goals, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And they're not expensive. They're not money-based. They're just sort of a few tweaks. I mean, you can always make things cost more money, but yeah, they're definitely, I like the way you put that, that they are definitely things in our control that we can do. And we don't have to do it like the article that showed up in the New York Times or something like that, but we can do it the way that we can fit it into our lifestyle.
Okay, before we move on to the next couple, I just have to ask, because I'm selfish, what are your thoughts on a good like 20 minute nap? Are you pro nap, or do you think if we got enough sleep at night, we wouldn't need a nap?
No, not necessarily. I think, again, some people really completely benefit from a 20 minute power nap, like amazingly. And I will also say that for those people, because sometimes your brain just needs a break, or you just didn't get as good of sleep, or just, I don't know, it's that kind of day, right? It's overcast. You're just like, I just want a nap. So, but there are some people that really struggle with a nap because it takes them so long to fall asleep or their mane's racing or whatever. There are some really nice sort of neuro sound kind of apps that you can use now to help that. So one that I use is called New Calm, and there's one called Calm, but there's the New Calm one. And it has literally one of its plays is a power nap, and it is 20 minutes. And I don't always fall asleep with it, but I actually, it gets you to a point where you really don't feel like you can move your limbs that well. Like it is completely rejuvenating. And then after I'm done with that, I'm like, wow. And I have never been able to nap. So I only share that because there are some people that are like, I would give money if I could do a 20 minute power nap, right? But they're just not wired to do that. I am definitely one of them. But some of these neuro beats, and it's just certain sound waves that work with your brain waves to kind of deregulate your system to bring it down and just really get that sympathetic nervous system to kind of calm itself down. And so it's very rejuvenating. So yes, if it works for you, I think it's a great strategy.
Thank you. I needed you to say that because I do love a nap.
Perfect.
I'd love a nap. All right. Well, I think that leads perfectly into discussing the next few habits that you talk about. And that is that you mentioned that regular exercise and mindfulness, which sometimes for me, those two habits are almost in tension with one another because one is like motion and the other is stillness. So just if you could just explain to us how those two different activities work together to support cognitive function.
Yeah. And so I love that you brought that up because that is another example where it becomes very person specific. So there are people, I was one of them, where when I would run long distances, it was a very brain clearing mindfulness activity for me. I'm not naturally wired to sit and meditate and just, you know, there's 1,000 forms of meditation, and I always encourage people to look into different ones. But the classic one that people think of is the one where you sit and you're supposed to let your thoughts go and not have and clear your mind or whatever. Some of us are not wired well for that. Mine was if I went for a nice long run, I was able to process things clear, be very mindful and intentional and thoughtful of what I was thinking about, and then kind of put closure on thoughts so that they weren't just constantly ruminating. And then I came back ready to go for my day. And I was very focused. For other people, they're like, no, 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 Janine, I'm just trying to breathe through my exercise. There's just like, there's no mindfulness there. That's survival mode. And I'm like, okay, that's fair. So, but the notion mindfulness is really just checking in with yourself. So whether you are doing it with exercise, whether you are at a stoplight and just saying, how do I feel? How's my body? And are my shoulders up to my ears right now? Have I been like working through something? And so my whole body is tense right now. Am I being anxious about something? So I talk a lot of times to people to also name it. I'm feeling anxious right now, because the minute I name it, then I can ask myself, what am I anxious about? And different ones. So some people do really well with journaling their feelings. Other people are like, I know, never. And okay, who can you talk to or can you think about it? But the minute you label it, then you can say, what's making me anxious? Is it an unresolved thing that I don't have an answer to? Is it something I'm worried about that I have no control over? Oh, I don't have control over that. Will it change if I worry about it? No, it probably wouldn't. Okay, what can I do instead that I enjoy, that I can kind of shift out of this? So it's really just mindfulness is just really checking in with yourself. And for some people, it's sitting in the morning for 15 minutes and just quiet and just kind of letting their head clear. For other people, it's exercising. For some people, it is literally while they're driving, just going, what's my body doing right now? Am I gripping the wheel? Are my shoulders up? All those things. Am I tense? And then, because the more that we are aware of what we're feeling and doing at different moments, the better we can regulate that. And then it also impacts our emotion and our mood, and then the way that we communicate with others. Because we all know sometimes when we're tense and we don't see it and then we kind of communicate it and people feel it, it creates this whole snowball effect of just a whole lot of yuck. And so the more, so that's really what that is. And then physical activity should really be something that you enjoy. And enjoy means I either, it makes me crazy while I'm doing it, but I enjoy the feeling when I'm done and I feel successful. And that's okay too. You don't have to love the exercise itself, but at the end of it, if you feel like you are just, you kicked butt and you rock, that's great. But it can just be, I love my dogs and I'm walking my dogs and I'm moving and I'm doing something I enjoy. But most of us will be much more consistent with something if it's something that we enjoy. So I always encourage people to really play with that idea and explore sort of. And also, some people are naturally wired that they want a lot of change. So it doesn't have to be one thing. It can be many things and just a menu of things, and they change it throughout the week and depending on whatever mood they are. I just encourage people to sort of have a short list. So when they have 15 minutes, they can just, yep, that's the one I want to do, and I go do it. So
yeah. On a personal note, were you a runner and then you shifted more to like, I mean, because I know you're super strong. I see you doing these poses that I'm like, oh, holy cow, I could never do that, you know? So did you shift like your focus of your physical activity, or did you just integrate more things? And if so, was it hard for you to kind of let go of the identity that came with being a blank?
Yeah, 100%. Exceptional question. I ran a lot while my kids were little. It was something I would get up at 5 a.m. I could run for an hour. Sometimes I had a running partner, sometimes I didn't. And I could get home before everybody got up, and it fit my lifestyle and it cleared my mind. And so it was amazing. After doing that for a lot of years and a lot of miles, there was a couple of things physically that were no longer serving me. And my doctors were really like, Janine, this isn't a good long-term plan for you anymore. And I'm not saying that running always injures people. I think part of it's just the way I'm built. Part of it is I probably made some mistakes along the way that I didn't realize it was creating. But long story short, I had to shift. And to your point about that identity, I went through literally a year where I was much more lost in that regard. Like, I was doing some physical things, but I didn't feel like that was me. And it took almost a whole year to reestablish my identity as somebody who was still practicing healthy things and finding what helped clear my mind at the same time. And even finding that variation. And initially people were like, oh, you should do yoga. And I was like sitting in yoga going, oh my God, because I was used to running. And I was just like, I can't do this. And then somebody told me about a class. It was like power yoga, which is like kick your butt, but it's still called yoga somehow. And so I did that. And I was like, okay, I can resonate with this. And now I can do the quiet yoga too, but it took a while. But it is an identity. And that's also what I really work on with people, regardless of it's physical or health things or anything, is owning that too. Like, I was a runner. This was how I cleared my head. And for that year, I wasn't able to clear my head. And I was a little bit more emotional, I was a little bit more stressed, and I could tell. And it just took me a while to find that. And so that's the other thing, that as people, if they know they're going to have a large transition, I kind of didn't, but if they know that, to be really owning that identity and then asking what was important about that identity. And once I realized that I needed to move and I needed to be able to process things while I was moving in some way, like that was good for me, then it was, okay, what can I find to do that? And so now I'm able to do that when I weight train, if I do yoga, if I do acro yoga, if I do inversions, things like that. Those, that fit me well, but it was very different than running. But I had to figure out what those things were, not that I was a runner, but what was it about running? What did I need? And then with that, then kind of starting to look for other things that had that characteristic.
Mm. Yeah, thanks for sharing that, because I think it's really important, particularly as life changes and our bodies change. So yeah, thanks for sharing.
Yeah. Another one of the habits that you mentioned was stimulate your mind. And I wondered, you know, is that learn a new language? Is that as simple as reading a book, fiction, nonfiction? What, how do you define, or maybe we don't, maybe we say whatever it is that you decide is stimulating to you, you're there.
So I think all of us can relate that there are just points in your life, depending on, and sometimes they're longer than others, right? Where you're going through the same routines and experiences daily. You get up, you have this routine, you go here, you have this. So the stimulate your mind is really anything that gives you slightly different input. So some people love to travel and that's how they will do it. Now, travel can cost money, so sometimes we can't do that as often as we'd like. But so to find other things, so to your point, Denise is like, yeah, it's whatever is sort of interest. And I'll give, like, I have people that pick up the Rubik's Cube and say, I'm just going to learn how to complete this. And then I'm going to do some challenges because they can do it while they're watching TV. They can do it while they're waiting to pick up their kids at an activity or at a break from work. So it's just something to give a different input than the normal. It can be something like, and I've had people where they decide that they want to get better at PowerPoint because they use it enough. And so they're learning all the different, you know, because we all know with software, there's like an endless amount of things that we can do with software. And so they're like, I just want to learn how to do it different than I've ever done it. And or add animation or something that I've never done, and I do slide decks all the time. So it can even be within something that you're used to doing, but adding that, or to your point, reading a book or watching a different documentary, or if it's a or a cooking class or whatever it is. And one of the things I want to mention too is I've worked with people where like we end up in a they end up going to a cooking class. They're remotely interested in cooking, but what they need is different people to be around because their circle got really small. So sometimes it's even like a slightly, sure, I'll learn how to cook some more, bake some more, whatever, you know, it can't hurt. But the real goal is I want to stimulate my mind by being around different types of interactions, even because I have a very set ones that I'm used to. So yeah, I view it as sky's the limit, but the way I just encourage people to think about it is different inputs. How can you get a different type of input than you're used to getting, whether it's tactile or whether it's fed to you or whether it's interaction or physical even? Because for me, for example, when I do some of my more balance or acro yoga poses where I'm doing all these kind of things in the air and hang whatever, that's a different stimulus for me. I have to work on my balance. I have to be intentional. I have to be focused and I have to be planful. So for me, that's a very different stimulus than the work that I usually do all day or the interactions that I have, right?
Yeah, sort of getting different neurons to fire.
And with each other in integrating sort of different movements that, especially as we get older, we just tend to do less of, you know. When was the last time we're all like, hey, let's do a balance challenge? So, you know, things like that.
Yeah, because as we get older, our balance, it's one of those things. It's like, I used to be so good at this, you know. Yeah, but it's a challenge. So, the last two things you talk about are practicing self-discipline and fostering meaningful connections. So, practicing self-discipline. So, these things we've kind of talked about, they kind of all seem to encompass being self-disciplined. And for me, sometimes that's easier said than done. I think for a lot of people, it can be, you know, I'm going to be more self-disciplined, which for me, oftentimes it means I'm going to take something out, like, I'm not going to drink any alcohol this month, or, you know, I'm not going to eat any sugar or whatever. And then also, you know, Miles is here at my feet. You know, I'm going to walk Miles every day this week for 30 minutes, not because I need the walk, but because he does. So having said all that, how do you propose people become more self-disciplined?
The first thing I talk to people about is thinking about that word or that phrase differently. because I think the examples that you gave are very common and classic, right? It's like, if I'm more disciplined, I won't do something, right? Because we think of it as sort of an impulse control, or like, I have this perfect set of behaviors that I'm engaged in. And what we know, well, there's lots of things I guess we know, but one of them is that instead, we don't do well with taking things away. So I always like to add things. And when I add them, oftentimes if they replace something that I would like to do less of, then it's like a better swap. Yeah. And so instead of telling your brain that I'm not going to have alcohol, it might be like, hey, I'm really enjoying, you know, each evening when it starts to get warm out, I love sitting on the deck with my husband and we have our wine. Maybe I'd like to do that less than every night or something, right? Like, I want to taper that down or something. So why do I enjoy this? I enjoy it because I'm spending time with my husband, the weather's beautiful, and it's a connection. What else might encompass all those things? And they probably don't have to include wine, right? So a lot of times when people have a goal, the first thing I want to do is say, like, why are you doing the current behavior? And what can we do that still gives you that same why? And there's a lot of behavioral principles that are pretty well, I won't go into them here because it's probably not that relevant, but we know this to be true. And so if I can find out the why you're doing what you're currently doing and you want to shape that a little bit, it's just adding on. So to my point on self-discipline, it's about taking small things that you want to change or add on or do, and then being consistent with them, as opposed to, I just went in my pantry and I got rid of every processed food and I'm going like all organic and whole food from now on, which for most of us lasts maybe a week if we're lucky. And then we just kind of go, that's too much, right? And I'm not knocking it either way, but I'm just saying we have a tendency when we think of disciplined is like, okay, starting tomorrow, I'm doing all of these things, as opposed to, I'm just going to add that 2 ounces of water, or I'm just going to do something small and consistent. And the reason being is because if I can reinforce myself for small wins, and Denise mentioned this before, if I have some success, I'm more likely to do more of it. So the mistake that a lot of us make is we have these lofty goals and we try to do all of that, then we don't make it. Then our self-esteem gets hit on that, or we feel less successful, we stop believing in ourselves as much, and that builds up over time. So this self-discipline, I like to use the term because I really want to get people to have a different mindset on that term. It just means I'm going to pick something and I'm going to do it, and I'm going to celebrate the fact that I did it. And I'm going to build that up so that I'm increasingly more excited and more happy to do that.
I love that. And I'm also thinking about all the ways that I wish I could have reinforced some of those positive attributes when I had kids at home. So for everyone who does still have kids at home, I think that there's so much to learn there.
And then the meaningful connections, it's very similar of just, what kind of interactions do I want in my life? Which kind do I have currently? And are there any that I'm either missing or that I could strengthen? Mm-hmm. And I really talk to people, especially again, as we get adults, is a lot of times the people that we spend time with have been decided almost for us, if we're not careful. The workplace dictates some of that. Our children's activities can dictate that. And so which people and what kind of connections and how can we make them more meaningful is super important as we are in our adulthood and thinking about, because a lot of us, when I talk to people, there are some either not strong enough connections or there's just missing types of connections that once we kind of explore that, then again, if I can articulate it, oh, I don't have that go-to girlfriend and I'm somebody that just wants that person that I can call up at any time and just verbally just let it out and they're, you know, they got my back. I don't have that right now. I used to have it in college. She moved away. We did this. Where can I find that again? Or And again, you know, we can't like, you know, I don't know, Google it and go, oh, there's my friend that's going to be that person now. But as long as if we know that we're looking for that, or that that's important to us, then it's easier to cultivate those.
Yeah. Well, we talk a lot on the podcast, and this won't be a new thought to you, because, you know, I stole it from theologians that are near and dear to our hearts, but that, you know, we are created for both vertical relationship with God and horizontal relationship with others. So when you're talking about that deep desire for connection, I just think about that we're hardwired. We were created for that in the image of God. And so I totally 100% agree. And I'm chuckling in my head because as we were talking today, I was thinking about how many of these 8 things can I do at once? This is the way I work. Okay. So I was like, so my running girls, who I adore, right? So I get this deep, meaningful connection with them. I get exercise and doing something I enjoy. And now the smarty pants of the group, which is not me, has laid down this challenge that we do the New York Times connections every day. Are you familiar with this game?
I'm not.
So it's on the New York Times app next to Wordle, which I love Wordle, and Wordle has become easy now, right? I'm going to celebrate that success.
There you go.
But connections, there's 16 words and you have to group them in groups of 4, and you get 4 chances to miss, or, you know, you lose that day. So anyway, my friends, we have the connections challenge, which is ironic because it not only do you connect the words, but the connections game connects us as well. So I love that. And I hate that all the same, because my brainy friend is so much better at than I am. And I'm like, I'm supposed to be the word person. She kills me every day. So having said that, if someone is not really a joiner, or they're not comfortable putting themselves out there, you know, how do you suggest that those people initiate habits that help them find that connection that they're looking for?
Yeah, excellent question. Primarily, I suggest 2 things. One is, because absolutely, there are initiators and there are responders, just in general. So, and then there's continuers. So, which can be the initiator or the responder. But the way that communication works is you have an initiator, a responder, and a continuer, right? Like it's a server, and then, you know, it's the tennis volley thing. So if you are not an initiator, it's super important to tell the friends that you do have, or the people that in your life, hey, I value spending time with you. I value so much when you ask me. I struggle with initiation, but I so much value when you do it. And it is a strength of yours. You're naturally good at initiating it. And I feel very blessed and appreciative to have that. Please never stop. And I will always respond. So then the trick is, you need to be an amazing responder. You need to be that person that they initiate, let's say to a group, you be the first one to respond, things like that. So that's what you bring to the table. But it's really important when you tell people that are in your life, even if it's like, oh, here's the other moms or dads at baseball, whatever. And once in a while, they'll be like, hey, we're going to go grab some food afterwards. You want to go? Even letting them know, gosh, I always appreciate that you initiate. It's not my strength, but man, I really enjoy this. Because a lot of times people value, oh, well, I'm always initiating and they never do. And so they must not really enjoy this and they're just being nice. So we have to tell people, if we're not a strong initiator, that we aren't, but that we really appreciate it. And we'll be that responder. We'll be right there. Then also, so that's my number one tip. The second tip is then to not think about it as putting yourself out there, but what is an interest that you have that you can pursue in a more communal setting? So if it is, so for example, you know, and there was running, right? If you tend to run by yourself, but maybe on Saturdays you go and run with the running group. Maybe in general, you prefer to run by yourself, but it's an opportunity one day a week where you go with a group of people that have a shared interest, and that's a way to connect. It's the same thing with the one woman I worked with was really struggling in the evenings, and she was acquiring some bad habits because she was lonely. So we really just went through like 15 different things. Do you like doing this? Do you like this? And she was one of the ones that like cooking is like, I enjoy it. And, you know, I'm kind of don't have any new recipes and I've been doing the same thing. So we just threw her in a cooking class. And the goal wasn't really to be that much better of a cook. You know, it was just she and her husband, but she met other people that she could share ideas with and other women. And that allowed her to, because if you're not a great initiator, it really helps putting yourself in something that naturally has a structure that connects people. So anything like a class, anything of those types of things, if you just go to a big group meeting where one person's talking to a whole group, it can be kind of hard. But if you do something like a class or a volunteer, that's the other thing I talk about, is there a learning opportunity or a volunteering opportunity? What an amazing place to meet people. And so those are usually the first two things that I talk to people about. And also to give themselves grace about just go to it. And you don't have to have any expectations. You don't have to walk away with 10 new friends.
Yeah.
Just get comfortable in your own skin in those environments.
Well, I think that's really important. And I appreciate you sharing that, because I don't think people like myself understand how hard it can be for people who are not initiators. So.
Yep. Absolutely. Yeah. Well said. And like I said, in society has this comparison game. Oftentimes I still hear it so often. It's like, wow, you know, she never invites us to her house. I'm always inviting to, you know, and I'm like, yeah, cause you're naturally wired for it and you're good at it and you love it. And does she show up? Yeah. Every single time. There's your sign. Like, you know, she appreciates it and enjoys it. But we just sometimes, yeah, it's hard to get out of our own kind of perspective of something and go, how could that be that hard?
But. Yeah. Well, and I want people to come to my house and know that it gives me joy to have them here and to welcome them like that. That feeds my soul. And I don't want them to feel bad.
Yes, exactly.
The other. So anyway,
yep.
This has been so delightful. I'm so thankful that you said yes and that you joined us. If people want to learn more about all of your teachings and get more content from you, where would you send them?
I think probably two main places. I have a website, it's jsadvantages.com, and that's where a lot of my business types of work is and interactions and that kind of corporate world, as well as some of my blogs. And then I also, as you mentioned, have a YouTube channel, and it's just Janine Steister, PhD is just the name of the channel, because I'm just not that creative. And so I have content there, and then people and then of course I'm on Instagram and Facebook and all those things. So,
okay. Well, we will link all of those ways for people to reach you in the show notes. And we know that the content is really, really good. So, okay, Janine, I'm going to end with a big ask. I hope that you'll come back again and be our guest, because this is really delightful.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. And I would very much love that. I love that you have such a wonderful platform to just share wonderful stories and thoughts and different ways to support everyone just to, you know, evolve and be who they're desired to be. So I would love that. Thank you.
Awesome. We will look forward to it. Thanks for listening to the podcast. We're honored you're sharing your day with us.
Do you love a good book? So do we. So join us for the Problem with Perfect Book Club. If you'd like more information about what we're reading this month and how to join us for the virtual discussion, please email us at theproblemwithperfect@gmail.com. Or if you have a topic you'd like us to discuss on the podcast, use that same email, theproblemwithperfect@gmail.com, to send us your ideas or feedback. We love hearing from you.
And if this episode has been helpful, please share it with a friend or a family member who might find it encouraging. Secondly, we would love for you to leave a review on Apple or on Spotify. It's only going to take you a few minutes, but it will really help our podcast grow. And while you're there, make sure you've subscribed to the podcast so you never miss an episode.
As always, a special shout out to our editor, Jordan Overkamp, for making us sparkle.
And remember, there's always enough grace for you today, so be sure to give it to yourself.